Hello, this is Macca, and I'm often asked if I still enjoy doing the program after quite a long time. My answer, of course. Just listen to the callers and the letters and the music and the emails. Where else, I say, where else? You find out about what Aussies are up to, what they think, what they feel. It's the Oz community writ large. That's large with a capital L. Enjoy. G'day, this is Macca.
Oh, g'day, Macca. Simon Bailey speaking here.
Hi, Simon.
How are you?
Yeah, good.
I'm on a mine site in Arizona in the US at the moment. They just won a contract to manage the dust on the haul roads. We supply products for doing that. Thought I'd ring you. I'm listening to you this morning.
Good on you, mate. Simon, are you a resident over there, or are you just visiting on your job?
We make the products in Brisbane.
Yeah,
I'm just over for the job.
All right. So you do this all around the world, Simon. Tell me, what's your company?
My company's called Barrion.
Mm-hmm. And what do they do?
Just a small business.
Yeah.
So it's my business. We do a couple of things. We make products for road maintenance and on haul roads and council roads. So I rang you a while ago. We're doing pothole repair products in Los Angeles.
Oh, right. Yeah, I remember that. Yep. So now you're in Arizona.
I am in Arizona, yeah. Yeah, we've got this is a mine like I've never seen before. It's the I think it's the biggest open cut mine in the world. It's a copper gold mine.
No.
And
gold's going through the roof. Well, it has. Yeah, I think it's steadied out a bit, but it's still very with the world. You know, in a crisis, everyone goes to gold apparently, and copper, of course, it's nearly as valuable as gold, isn't it?
Sure is. But this is on a scale that I've never seen before. They've got the big Caterpillar 400-ton capacity haul trucks, and they've got 183 of them running 24 hours a day. It's pretty wild.
It's unbelievable, Simon. That's why I love talking to people like you on the program, because you don't know. You live your lives of quiet desperation in the suburbs or out in the middle of nowhere, and all of a sudden you realise what's happening around the world. You know, people ring from Abu Dhabi or, you know, over there in the Middle East and stuff like that. So it's just, yeah, it's nice to talk to people. So, Simon, you travel all over the place with your business?
Yeah, I do. We do a fair bit in Papua New Guinea, and we manage a few mines in Western Australia, and we supply products all around Australia for pothole repairs and crack sealers and whatnot for asphalt. So I do a lot of travel. Yeah.
So how do you get your gigs? I mean, you've got a company and it's in Brisbane. How do you get a gig in Arizona? Do you look it up, or do they ring you, or what's the story?
No, they very few mines will come and ring us. We generally approach them. I was actually driving around Arizona a year ago, just having a look around, and we drove up to this mine. I've got an American business partner, but we drove up to this mine and it was a dust bowl of, you know, it just looked like it was Mars. So we went and saw them and said, I think we can help you with that. So we did a pilot for the last month. We did a pilot, and they've just given us the contract, 12-month contract, and we're away here. And they've got five other mines in Arizona too, so they want us to roll out to all of them, which will be great.
America's, yeah, again, it's a, we live in this little place, as Mr. Keating called it, the arse end of the world. But he just meant we're a long way from anywhere. But America's just going gangbusters, isn't it? I mean, dear, oh dear, they're just...
Yeah, it certainly does. Nobody seems to be too worried about fuel here. You know, the prices have gone up a bit, but nothing much has really slowed down as far as I can tell. Yeah, it's an interesting place, but it's been hot this year too. So they've just come out of winter, and it's they're already getting 42-degree days here, which they don't normally get until May. So I don't know what that's just a hot season, I think.
When do they start the so-called daylight saving? How you save a daylight, I don't know, but maybe in a bottle. But when it starts, is that start in a month's time, or is it start now? What's the story?
I've got no idea, to be honest with you. I don't take a lot of notice. It's here, this mine runs 24 hours a day, so time sort of seems to be of little significance here. And, you know, there's no public holidays on a Friday, you know, Good Friday or Easter Sunday. It's full steam ahead.
No long weekends. Dread.
No, exactly. I mean, a lot of the management aren't here, but the workers don't. I mean, you get a small amount of extra money for a night shift, but you know, $2 an hour. But that's it. They're not highly paid. But they work hard, so you know, they're doing long hours here.
Well, there you go, Simon. How long? When do you come home, or how long do you stay there?
Well, I'm supposed to be home for my wedding anniversary, but I think, sadly, I'm going to miss out on the 9th of April. My wife and kids are in Yamba at the moment, so I'm very jealous of them. Hopefully I'll be home by mid-April sometime, maybe the end of April.
It might be raining in Yamba. I don't know. There's a bit of rain around, so in Oz, but you never know.
It's still God's country.
All right, Simon, good on you, mate. Nice to talk to you.
Good on you, Macca. Thank you very much.
See you, mate. Keep in touch. G'day, this is Macca.
Good morning, Macca. This is Trevor Richards from Morpeth in the Hunter Valley.
Hi, Trevor.
Macca, whilst I live on the Hunter River and often go kayaking there, I've just completed a tinny rally from Mildura to Manham along with 92 other tinnies down the River Murray.
Uh-huh.
And a couple of very interesting things came to light as we did that trip. The first is that the New South Wales border of the River Murray has still not been fenced off from livestock entering the river, which means that the river is very denuded on the New South Wales side, whereas on the Victorian side, it's been classified national park along the river edge for decades, and there's magnificent river red gums, wattles, native grasses and reeds all the way to the riverbank.
Wow.
And the exact opposite on the other side. And I can't believe that the Murray-Darling Basin Authority, which was enacted in 2007 to manage water in a sustainable manner, has not done anything about it.
Oh, well, you shouldn't be surprised about anything in this life, Trevor. When you say you're in a tinny, my idea is a tinny, it's 9 foot long and got a little outboard motor on it. But is that what you've been in?
Well, a little bit bigger. The maximum size tinny was allowed in this rally is 4.5 metres, and a 60 horsepower is the biggest motor you're allowed. But there was tinnies there from quite small to up to that size.
Must have been a noise going down the Murray.
It was. Not all together. We're in groups, and then we just, for the first 2 days, there's no communications along the river. It's very poor communicated from Mildura through to Renmark. But once we got to the second third day, we were allowed to just break up and then just take our own time and do whatever we wanted, more or less.
But you're saying no mobile phones early on?
That's right.
That must have been a blessed relief, mate.
It was. It was fabulous.
Exactly.
Yeah. And the second issue was that on the second night, we camped on a farmer's property on the New South Wales side. He was a fourth-generation farmer, and his big beef was almond trees and the amount of water that they use compared to other crops.
Mm.
So almond trees require 12.5 million litres of water from the River Murray per hectare to grow. And by his calculation, one almond kernel requires 13 litres of water. And his beef was not so much with the almond growers per se, but with the trendy people who drink coffee almond lattes. And he estimates that 3,000 litres of water required to produce one coffee latte using almond milk.
Oh, well, mate, you know that we're the big coffee snobs of the world. We have almond. Tanya, do you drink an almond latte? No, she doesn't. No, she drinks an turmeric bubuccino. Yeah. Well, look, Dennis, thanks. That's interesting. One kernel requires 13 litres.
13 litres was his calculation.
What was
so
his?
A latte required 3,000 litres of water to produce an almond latte.
People will immediately stop drinking and say, I'm not making fun of it. I just think it's interesting when you get these stats, mate.
Yeah.
All right, Dan, good on you.
You
should have rung us on the Murray. That's what you should have done.
Well, if we'd had phone reception, we would have.
Oh, well, thankful for small mercies. Good on you, Dennis. Thank you.
Okay.
Where's Stratos? Where are you?
I'm in Newcastle, near the interchange, West Newcastle, and I'm at a phone box, and I'm here to visit and to get to know my third and latest grandnephew.
Well, good on you. That's great, Stratos. You're in a phone box?
Yes, I am, yes.
Oh, good on you, mate. What's it like there in the phone box this morning? Is it cool?
Nah, not really. It's just right, Marco. It's just right. It's not cold. It's not too hot. Everything is just fine.
Stratos, where do you live?
In West Footscray in Melbourne.
And you've driven up to Newcastle to see your grandson, is that right?
No, we took a flight up. And just to get to see my brother's children and grandchildren who live in Newcastle.
Well, that's worthwhile. Nice thing to do at Easter, mate. And what else are you going to do with yourself? And what, you're out walking this morning or something, are you?
Yeah, I just got up. I had a shower and I thought, well, I like to go for a walk in the morning. So I went out for a walk. And tonight we'll go up to Maitland and see the Newcastle women take on Melbourne City.
Oh, is that on today? Is it tonight?
Yes. Yeah, at 5 o'clock.
You're a soccer fan?
I'm a women's sports fan, especially with soccer, yes.
And is there any reason why you don't like the men? Or?
Well, I think that the women play more sincerely.
The blokes will be interested to hear that. But anyway, it's fair enough.
Well, get them to prove me wrong. I mean, last time I went to see a men's game, I thought I had come to a suburban match between two different neighbourhoods. The standard was so low, I thought, well, why did I bother to come? And that was Melbourne Victory, by the way. And then the next day, I got an email from the president of Melbourne Victory apologising.
Oh, well, you might be right. I mean, I sometimes think, the same thing about rugby league players. You know, so they get flogged and they're all on the same money. Like, the two teams are playing and they're all on $500,000, $800,000 each, but one side plays really well and the other side plays like they don't care. Because they're still going to get paid. I think what they should do, that if you don't win, your pay gets docked by, 50% or something like that.
I think that's a good idea.
I do too. I think they'd try a lot harder because now they get paid whether they win, lose or draw, and these blokes are on, you know, I'm talking about the rugby league, but there's probably the same in the Aussie rules, and they're on big dough. Maybe they should say, well, look, if you lose, because
you don't get a bonus, or
exactly,
instead of paying them $700,000 a year, you pay them $600,000 a year.
No, you pay them You pay them $100,000 for that. You pay them.
Yep.
You know, if they lose, I don't know. It'd be hard to do.
Formula.
Yeah,
I'll have to work out a formula.
Exactly, Stratos. You couldn't do that today. And ring me next week. Good on you, mate. Nice to talk to you.
All right, mate. Thank you.
See
you for talking to me. Okay. You have a great morning.
Thanks, mate.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye.
Quentin's in Townsville. Morning, Quentin.
Morning, Mark. How are you this morning?
Yeah, good, mate. What's happening in Townsville?
Oh, the weather's finally turned beautiful. So we've had a long wet season, as you would have heard, with all the flooding and everything going on. And we have potentially got another cyclone coming at us. But right now, this morning is the first morning we've had under 20 degrees this year, I think, since last winter. So,
well, that'll be a relief.
Oh, unbelievable. And clear skies this morning. The sun's up and, yeah, taking advantage of it, heading down to the Strand for a nice run along our beautiful Strand, and then head down to Henron Park and drop off Easter eggs to our homeless down there, and doing a nice Sunday morning, mate.
It's I enjoy Townsville every time I go there. I wish we were down there this morning. It's different when you're outside because you're standing up and there's nowhere to run, nowhere to hide. Like here in the studio, I'm on my own and I can close the door, and you can just wear your undies or whatever. But when you're out on the Strand, but it was fun. We were there. We should go again this year. I love the Strand and people running along like you and talking and. You could give us some Easter eggs, mate.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful weather from now through to August, mate. So you need to book in August, come up for our rodeo mid-August, and have a bit of fun on our Strand, mate.
Good on you, Quentin. Great to talk, mate.
Awesome, mate. Cheers to them.
See you, mate. I'm talking to Sean. Is it Sean?
Yes, it's Sean Haynes from Yugara.
And what have you got there? It's like a side of bacon.
It is a middle of bacon, which has just been in the ham and bacon competition for the district exhibits.
And it's got a blue, that must mean it's first prize, mate.
It is first prize, so
is that yours?
No, it's looking very enticing. Wouldn't mind a bit on the pan for bacon and eggs, Ian, but this is going up into a display to show all the quality produce which comes in from across the state for the Royal Easter Show. I'm a steward, so helping and supporting the judging and making sure we can put the best exhibits on display and highlight that to all the visitors to the Royal Easter Show.
In a mad, mad world we live in, it's something reassuring about seeing good food produced and turning up here, and people can see it and think, well, the whole world is not crazy, just part of it's crazy. This is it's very reassuring, I think, to come to the show.
It certainly is, Ian, to come to the show and to see where our food and fibre comes from, and to really appreciate that there's a lot of effort and there's a lot of dedicated people right across our country who really make and produce what we all rely on and we sometimes take for granted.
How's things in Yugara?
We're ticking along, so there's lots of community assets which are being brought back to life. We've still got a few people still families in pods.
After the flood,
so we're 3.5 years on, but we're still continuing to advocate and to get them back in their long-term accommodation. But the community, we continue to move forward and celebrate the good times and come together and continue as a community to move forward.
Sean, good on you, thank you.
Thank you, Ian, great to see you.
I'm Sydney Royal, it's the first day, it's a lovely day, I'm talking to
Judy Hannon from Mount Eliza in Victoria.
And you've come up here, why, Judy?
Because, why not? And also just to check out the sheds here at Sydney Royal to see what it's like in comparison to the Melbourne show. I'm a CWA Home Industries judge and I've judged twice at Royal Melbourne, so come and have a look and see what's happening up here.
Yeah, I've been to all the shows, Perth and everywhere, the Echo. I think Sydney is great because of the district exhibits where the whole of the state has various sections and they come and display their wares. It's a wonderful thing. I think Melbourne's not the show it was. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Melbourne's changed and entries have been down. So he's hoping that we'll pick up and keep, thriving. But I think it just depends on what the people want to do. The sheds are different. They're not there permanently. I'm not sure what it's like here. Are all the animals and displays here permanent or do they move on?
Mostly. I mean, there's various days for various judging and things like that. The sheep are a couple of days and the cattle and things like that. In the olden days, when they used to have the show out at the showgrounds,
Yes. It
was, everyone was on top of one another. There was cow shed everywhere and, it was,
but
it was
fun. But that's what we like.
Yeah, exactly. How's things in Mount Eliza?
Perfect. Yeah. Good place to be. It's quiet, no nonsense. In fact, we've got the block in Mount Eliza this year, so that's changing things a bit. Everyone's very curious. But it's a good place to be.
Oh, that's the TV show.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Well, you take care. Lovely to see you.
Yeah,
and,
you too. Yeah.
It's good to listen in, so thank you.
Nice to meet you. Good
take
on you.
Take care. Bye.
G'day, this is Macca.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, Macca, it's Gus. How are you?
Good, thanks, Gus. What are you doing? Where are you?
Well, I'm just past the Nullarbor Roadhouse. I'm just heading east across the Nullarbor.
Wow.
And I've just, I took 21 horses up to the Kimberley for some cattle stations, and then I've just sort of doing the whole lap.
What's it, so these are working Brumbies, are they working?
Not Brumbies, no, they're just, they're plant horses, yeah, for the stock camps.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so they still use horses, not motorbikes. I suppose they use both, do they?
No, a lot of them use horses, I think, yeah.
And where did the horses come from, Gus? And what you've got
all around the place a bit, but I live inland from Coffs Harbour, so I just sort of accumulate them. They tell me what they want, and I just find them.
Have you got a big horse float? Have you?
Oh, I've got a truck and a pig trailer that I can fit about 20-21 on.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
And they travel all right? You got to stop and give them a wee and food and stuff?
Well, I try and sort of average 10 hours. Just depends. You just got to take it as it comes a bit, see how they travel. But, yeah, they went pretty well. It was quite cool on the way up, so they travelled pretty well.
Well, that's nice. And they're heading there in the dry season, so it can be lovely weather up there.
Yeah, well, it was pretty wet the whole way around because I had to wait a bit to get up there because the roads was shut sort of west of Katherine. And then they had that cyclone down the east coast of WA, so I had to pull up there for a day waiting for them to check a bridge out. But,
so, Gus, tell me, is this what you do for a living? You collect some horses and take them to places or what?
Yeah, it's probably a big part of it. I've probably taken about 400 horses up there in the last 5-6 years.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, that's a long trip, mate.
It is, yeah.
It's a lot of diesel.
Yeah, a lot of diesel, especially at $3.10 or $20 or whatever they want to charge.
Yeah, they want to charge. Yeah. That's the operative word too. Some of them anyway. But you've made it. So that's a lovely trip too. So how's things at the Nullarbor Roadhouse? Did you go fishing off the cliffs
there? No, I didn't pull in there, but I might pull in down the road somewhere. But, yeah, it was a beautiful sunset this morning, I think, because I was listening to you this morning and someone at the start was talking about the sunsets on the Nullarbor.
Yeah, he was a truckie.
Yeah.
He was a truckie. Yeah. And, it's a little grab we used at the start of that the road train thing, 4 dogs and 30 tons. And he said, yeah, I'm just about to start across the Nullarbor. He says, oh, I reckon I got a bit of diesel in my blood. And I said, well, we should have a transplant. If he's got it in his blood, he should line up.
Yeah, that's right. Might need it. Might be worth a bit. Put up your life insurance.
Yeah, exactly. So, Gus, you live inland from Coffs Harbour. So that's how long's that trip you've taken, Coffs?
It's about 5,000 up to sort of Derby, 5,000 k's there. It'll be 11,000 by the time I get home, something like that.
And what's that in dollars and cents, do you reckon, if you work that out?
I reckon it might be 14 or 15 grand in fuel. Probably.
Yeah, it's a lot of money. Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, but I wonder if it'll go down again after this, if it all fixes up.
Yeah, I don't know. It's quite bizarre because it's pretty much been a similar price all the way around, where it's usually there's a big discrepancy in places. But, yeah, I got it for $2 in Cunanara when it was $3.10 everywhere else. I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah, and what... But see, before this started, what was it, about $1.60, $1.70 a litre or something, or $1.80?
Yeah, Coffs Harbour's a bit dearer than that, I think, but it's always cheapest at Cunanara and Katherine all the way around.
And even if things get back to some sort of normality, it's a bit like the end of COVID, I think, when people said, oh, once COVID's finished, it'll all go back to normal. Since COVID's gone, the cost of living, inflation's gone nuts, and the value of your... Yeah. That's the thing I really bemoan, is the fact that your dollar's not worth anything anymore. I mean, it just goes for things like...
And I reckon a lot of businesses worked out how long you'll wait for stuff, and so, they haven't changed that much either.
No. Gus, a lot of us wish we were out on the at the Nullarbor Roadhouse, actually, because you go, they go fishing off the cliff there, and I say, what if you get a snag and it's too bad? Because it's about 200-foot drop there, you know? And
yeah, yeah. And well, it's up here a bit further, you come really close to the ocean, and in the truck you get a really good view of it as you're driving along.
Oh, and that Southern Ocean, it's mighty. It's awesome, isn't it? Awe-inspiring when you see it. It's just fantastic.
Yeah, it is. And the sun coming up over, it's pretty cool.
And you can
it's pretty cool to go around and go. I've done a few laps of Australia, and if you do it different times a year, it's always different. It's always good to see.
Yeah.
You could probably drive a mob of cattle from Coffs Harbour to the Kimberley at the moment. Like, it's green feed and water on the side of the road everywhere.
Gus, great to talk to you. I'll see you at Coffs sometime, I hope.
Good on you, Macca.
Thanks, mate.
See you, mate. Bye.
See you, mate. Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Oh, Macca. It's Trevor from William Creek. How are you going?
Trevor Wright?
Yeah.
Mr. Wright? How are you, Trevor?
Yeah, good, Macca, thanks.
That's the way. What's happening in William Creek? Oh, I've heard all about it. You're busy. You're busy.
Yeah, look, we've had a very interesting year with the water events that occurred, and the amount of erosion on the roads and that, and also the fact that the amount of rain that from local filling around the lake has put a lot of water into it. And also, like your previous caller was saying, the amount of vegetation out there is incredible. I've never seen a year like it in the 30 plus years I've been out at William Creek.
Mm-hmm. And you're flying people over the I suppose they can't get through to William Creek at the moment, can they? Or can they by road?
They can in four-wheel drives, and hopefully the government will send up a couple of road crews up there, and we'll start to get the roads back in reasonable conditions. And from there, people will, if they're able to travel and there's fuel around, get out and have a bit of a look around. But she's an interesting year, that's for sure.
I'll say. And what are you've got a, I know Dick Smith sold you his plane, didn't he? His caravan, is that right?
Yeah, Dick sold it to me, and we've got it at William Creek, and Dick's actually come out and had a look at it.
And he wants it back, does he? No.
He wants it back. Yeah, I was talking about fuel and that, and I just recently purchased a plane out of Germany. It's called a Kodiak. It's a 10-seater, and we were going to use it around the lake and that. And it has very short takeoff and landing capabilities. It'll get off the ground in about 400 metres. And unfortunately, this incident in the Middle East happened. We were supposed to bring it home that way. And anyway, they've closed the airspace off, which you'd expect anyway. And the other thing is you can't get insurance out there. So we've now had to reroute it round through Scotland, Iceland, Greenland, Canada, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Hawaii, and then into Australia. But
you're going on the Cook's tour, yeah.
Cook's tour, yeah. And never expected it in a million years. And you talk about pricing increases in fuel and that. The cost of doing that way, it's gone up three times of what we was the budget was to go down through the Middle East and India.
That's horrendous. I mean, it'd be nice to go on a trip. So you want to go to a trip to Iceland, Finland, Scotland, diddly-dum, that'd be nice. But, when you're counting the dollars, mate. So what's a plane like a Kodiak cost you?
A lot of money. They're very similar to Dick's plane, the Cessna Caravan, but they're built much more rugged. And because we do a lot of work around the lake, the Simpson Desert and that, I thought it was a great plane to have there. There's not many operating in Australia, and I don't think there's any in South Australia or Victoria. So, you know, it's just one of those cases of bite the bullet and that, and get it out here and get it up and going again.
And what's tell us about the lake. We sort of had a bit of a report last week, but I remember years ago, 20 years ago, a bloke rang me, and I think he was English, but he said the lake is it's red colour. It's a red colour.
With the super saline bacteria in it.
I suppose. Look, I don't know. You're the expert.
I wouldn't say I'm an expert by any means, Macca.
Oh, you've been there. You've been there a good while, Trevor.
Yeah, no, it looks incredible. The lake, especially in which one is it? I'll get me excited. Gabelt Bay, Madigan's Gulf. That's where Donald Campbell did his land speed record. The amount of water that's gone into it, and you have this relationship between salt, fresh water, and also temperature. and it over time, and as it gets lower, it turns the lake pink. And to have the whole of Madigan's Gulf go pink is amazing, because it'd be about 30 kilometres long and about 20 kilometres high. I'd say it's probably the biggest area of pink that I know of anywhere, that's for sure. But what I found, sorry for butting in,
You're right.
I found very interesting this year, last year there wasn't many birds on the lake, and I thought, oh, that's really unusual, because we started to get a fairly big fill out of the Diamantina. But this year, with all the local rains, the amount of pelicans that have turned up is just amazing. I think just on one island, there were 7 or 8 rookeries out there, and I'd say there'd be at least 20,000 birds, and they're increasing exponentially, that's for sure. So my gut feeling is when the Georgina, Eyre Creek, and the Diamantina, and also the Coopers arrive, we're in for, a huge fill.
Mm.
And one of the locals, who the owner of Mount Barry, and that he wrote a letter to the government saying, well, South Australian government saying, he reckons around August that the Lake Eyre South will actually flood over on the Unidata track. So it'll be interesting to see if it occurs, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's a couple of things. Firstly, it's boggling, I think, to me, to think that Donald Campbell did the land speed record and it was a salt crust of, about a foot thick.
Yeah.
And it hasn't, I don't know, that was in the 60s. And it hasn't really been like that ever since, has it? And the other thing is that people have said to me, when Lake Eyre's got lots and lots of water in it, there's lots of rain all over the place. And there has been this year so far, hasn't there? I mean,
that's right.
And maybe that'll continue, Trevor.
No, this is right. One of the things I find that's quite interesting, when you live in an area, you pick up a few things over a period of time, is how you have all these big fluffy cumulus clouds occurring over the lake when it had a good covering of water in it, and you'd actually have rain over the lake and around the outside over the the land areas, you'd have basically nothing. Then the other thing you find at times, you get this kind of fog out over the lake as well.
Yeah, it's a big area of water, isn't it? It's a huge area.
It's huge.
And I don't know, because the early explorers wouldn't have seen it, but there was the theory that there was a big inland sea in the middle of Australia, and they were right, maybe because they hadn't seen it, but they just imagined there would be, and there was, and there obviously has been for time immemorial.
Well, that's right. You pick the right year, you turn up there, you'd utterly believe it, and it spreads out, because the lake's about 144 kilometres long, the north and the south, and this is just rule of thumb, it's about 80 kilometres wide. And from the shoreline at Madigan's Gulf, which is the main viewing area there, you can only see out about 16 kilometres. And the reason being that you haven't got very many high points on which to stand or go from, and that's why aviation's so popular up there. If you want to get the big overview with the channel country, the lake, the whole creeks, etc. You've really got to fly it.
It's amazing. It's an amazing body of water. It's real. Somebody said to me about being off the coast, 20 miles off or 20 k's off the coast out in the ocean. It's a wilderness. Out in the middle of Lake Eyre, whether it's dry as a bone or if it's full of water, there's another wilderness for you. You're just lost in the middle of nowhere. It's the dead heart of Australia, but it's just a most amazing and intricate and interesting place, Trevor. Good on you.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's incredible. I went out there for 3 months, and 30-plus years I'm still there, so it definitely has an interest, that's for sure. And where else in Australia in a light aircraft you've got to take life jackets when you're crossing the lake? I mean, there's no other place.
Trevor, great to talk to you. I hope to see you sometime this year. Be nice.
Yeah, good on you. Thanks, Mac.
See you, mate. This is the All Over News. It is the All Over News, and the events of the last few weeks have brought into sharp contrast, as we all know, how dependent we are on maritime transport and how vulnerable we are when it comes to the necessities of life, which for one reason or another we don't have anymore. We take it for granted. Things like petrol, diesel, toilet paper and glass. This was Aaron last March.
I'm just at the Oceania glass factory that's closing down. We're just draining the tin from the tin tank to close the line down officially to end glass manufacturing in Australia. People may know it as the old Pilkington factory in Dandenong with the big golf ball out the front in Greens Road. Yeah, we're currently draining the tin out of the tin tank to close off the line officially forever. No more architectural glass. Mainly for windows, all sizes from, you know, 3mm up to 12mm. We also laminate it here, or we did. Yeah, we're closing down possibly tomorrow.
How come?
The cheap imports, the furnace needs to be repaired, and many, many other factors. Energy, gas prices. Yeah, they all come together. And
dear. How many people employed there?
250 people. Some of those might find jobs in the distribution if the creditors are able to sell that side of the business, but the actual manufacturing side is shut down last Monday when they turned the furnace off. 169 years of glass making in Australia has now ended.
And the imported stuff comes from where?
From Indonesia, Vietnam, China. There seems to be a bit of a glut in glass after COVID, and they've been dumping it into Australia cheaper than what we can make it for.
Well, see, that shouldn't be allowed, should it? That shouldn't be allowed. It's what the Trumpster's on about, people dumping things in America and Americans losing their jobs, and that's why they voted for him, I think, because a lot of people are out of a job. I don't know, has the price gone down? Because it always seemed to be fairly expensive to get a reasonably small piece of glass, you know, sheet glass for your windows. Fairly expensive, isn't it?
It's probably going to be more expensive now, Macca, that we've been told that most of the Chinese glass has already gone up in price because we've shut down.
That was Aaron, as I said, last March. And I said, what are you going to do? And he said, oh, well, I'll try and find a job. And I hope that Aaron has found another job. But it's a bit sad that we don't make any glass here in Australia. And at the Royal Easter Show last Thursday, I bumped into a bloke called Mark Kierans. He adds to Aaron's story. Your name is?
Mark Kierans.
What do you do, Mark?
Stone and ornamental glass, fix windows, glazier by trade, and then stained glass by trade.
Windows in churches and things like that, all that sort of thing?
Windows in churches.
LED lighting.
Schools and, yeah, LED lights and repairs. And
what sort of business is that?
There's very few people who can do it anymore. Unfortunately, there might be six people left in Sydney that are really still working. The TAFEs and that haven't been training people. So, yeah, there's still breakages and someone's got to fix them. Insurance companies have a real problem trying to get people to repair them nowadays.
You notice when you go past a church in a country town that the LED light windows have been covered with some screen to stop people throwing rocks through it or things like that, because I suspect it takes a lot of cash to replace something like that.
It is. It's expensive now, and the glass is getting rarer. A lot of the glass factories overseas closed over the last 20 or 30 years, and funnily enough, the glass factories changed over to solar production, solar panel glass instead of the stained glass. So the glass is very hard to get now. The same glass factories that were making coloured glass found it more economical and more demand to make the glass for solar panels. So they all changed over. Also, in China, there's still a fair bit going on, but they used to make the stained glass in the old method, and they tried to decarbonise, so they've got out of all the coal-fired furnaces, all the little ones closed. There's still a few more still going, but where it goes from here into the future, where you get the glass from, it's going to be more and more hard.
A bloke rang us, look, might have been last year, about the closure of a glass factory, I think, in Melbourne. He rang, and he was very concerned about that, as I know a lot of listeners were.
Yeah, it's unfortunate the government didn't step in and save that, and now China have imposed a tax on glass coming out of China to Australia, where that tax wasn't on Australia before, because we had our own supply, and now nobody in Australia produces float glass for the building. So that's a real problem. I think it's a real security issue for the countries. It's also, you know, it's been happened before in history. When the East and West Berlin Wall came up, the East suddenly discovered all the glass factories were on the other side of the wall. They had to come up with another way to try to find glass. That was where chemically toughened glass came from, because
something you take for, like lots of things in life, we take for granted till we don't have them anymore, like toilet paper and diesel.
Yeah, glass.
And glass.
Glass is everywhere. There's more and more of it. People want bigger and bigger windows. There's still some innovation coming through. There's a product called vacuum glass that's coming into the industry. Instead of these large double glazed units, a smaller, thinner thing that lasts 20, 50 years. So, yeah, glass is everywhere.
Mark, lovely to talk to you, mate. Good luck.
Thank you, Ian. Thank
pleasure.
You.
That's Mark Kierans, and it's amazing who you meet when you're wandering around at the Royal Easter Show. Somebody said to me, look, half of Sydney goes through the gates at the Royal Easter Show, and it's the same with all the big shows. You meet lots of people there. And interestingly, my first job when I left school or left uni was at Sydney Tech College, in the School of Building. And I remember distinctly the name of the bloke, George Louis, at the School of Flat Glass. Just one of those things. This is the All Over News. This is the All Over News, and there's nothing more exciting or indeed magical to me than watching someone at a spinning wheel or a treadle or a loom, and to just observe as something beautiful takes place. It comes forth, a shawl, a mat, a rug, or a tapestry. A bit like watching a spider weave a wonderful spider web, if you've ever sat and watched that, or a small bird creating a nest, bit by bit, strand by strand, flitting around the garden. That's why I love going to a show, city or country, to see the creativity that's taking place or has taken place, and the pride that people have in doing so. My name's Ian McNamara. I work at the ABC. What's your name?
Oh, Macca on Sundays.
Yeah, that's me, yeah. What's your name?
Cheryl.
Cheryl's sitting here, ladies and gentlemen, and she's just got some wool in her hand and she's at a spinning wheel. Is that a spinning wheel? What sort of spinning wheel is that?
Called a wind wheel. Came out of Tasmania. It was an engineer in Tasmania. And it's hue and pine, which you can't do anymore. And it's 50 years old at least. It's just a lovely wheel to use. I enjoy using it. And I've got a spindle as well. I do all sorts of things with it.
Cheryl, where are you from?
Jervis Bay.
And you're here at the Sydney show. Do you usually come up here for this? And
I've been coming up for a very long time.
So you've got something on your little loom there, and you call it waffle weave.
Waffle weave, yes. It's like waffle that you eat. It will look like that when I take it off, and it will relax and the waffles will all come up. You can't see it very well when it's on the loom because it's under tension. So once it's all woven, then I'll take it off and you wash it and it comes up. It looks lovely.
Yes, as I said, my teacher used to say when I'd handed an essay, a lot of this is just waffle, Ian.
That can't be right. That definitely cannot be right. You've been doing this for an awful long time.
That's wool. You've got some merino wool and you're making some...
I'm making a yarn with it. So I have washed it, but there's still a little bit of grease left in it. So I'm just working with it, putting it through onto the spinning wheel. So we spin one bobbin and we do that clockwise, and then we take that one off and we do another one clockwise, and then we put them onto a carrier and spin it back in the opposite direction, which then gives you your yarn that you can knit, sew, crochet, whatever you want to do with it.
It's a wonderful thing. I've been to a rug place in Sydney, and the lady used to get rugs from India and from Afghanistan, and they were marvellous things.
Yes, they are. Their equipment is so old, and it just works. It just works, and they produce such beautiful things. Their dyes are usually all organic because they don't buy the chemical ones. They're just lovely.
You can use, like, eucalyptus leaves and all sorts of leaves and bark and things, can't you?
Yeah, you can do. The only problem that we've got is that the light fastness, which is, it fades. It fades when you're using the natural dye, a lot of the natural dyes, unless you're using pretty strong mordants, which is what holds the dye in place.
So how did you... You notice that the ladies here are not all 21. Do many youngsters get involved in this? I suppose they're too busy, are they?
Well, obviously, the young ladies are usually working during the week. So we now have nighttime groups that meet. We have them on the weekend as well. The New South Wales Hand Weavers and Spinners Guild is in Eastwood.
My mum was a member of that.
Aha, good, excellent. And we've now got Brush Farm House in Eastwood, and they do spinning courses, weaving courses and all that sort of thing all year.
And when did you first get the bug?
Oh, that was a
When you were younger?
Yeah, it was. I've always liked fabric and textiles and things like that, but I had a friend who had a shop and he had them in the shop, and I said, oh, okay, I'll have a go at that, and got the bug, and I haven't done anything else for a while since.
But Cheryl, it's so practical. I mean, when you've made something like that, I mean, you can make a shawl or a rug or what, it's just...
All the garments and everything. There's up in the showcase in the main arts and crafts building. We've got a full range of garments there, as well as we have the spinning, we have the weaving, and we also have felting in that section. It's all mainly wool and it just looks wonderful.
It must give you a great sense of achievement, which I don't think we have as much in this day, when you actually have made something and you can say, look, I did that, and it lasts forever. How's things in the bay?
The bay's looking wonderful. Absolutely wonderful, yes.
Nice to meet you, Cheryl. Keep up your paddling.
Oh, yes, absolutely, all the time.
Nice to talk to you. Thank you.
Nice to talk to you too.
Cheryl Fletcher from Jervis Bay at Sydney's Royal Easter Show. This is the All Over News, and as I said, I just marvel at the people you meet at the show. Just people walking around, kids, show bags, and a couple there with their kids, and an interesting conversation takes place. What's your name?
Dan Harrison.
Where are you from, Dan?
Coffs Harbour. Came down for a wedding and was supposed to go back, but kids wanted to see the show. They're having a great time.
What do you do up in Coffs?
I work at the National Marine Science Centre at the university.
I've seen that. You drive past that on the highway.
That's just north of Coffs there. Great spot.
What do you do there?
I'm an oceanographer, Southern Cross University.
I've always wanted to meet an oceanographer.
Oh, right.
And a stream gauger. I think that's a great job, being a stream gauger. So tell me, what are you studying in the ocean at the moment?
We're working on a big project to try and mitigate the bleaching on the Great Barrier Reef, so trying to find ways to stop the corals bleaching.
You do a lot of things at Coffs Harbour, don't you?
Yeah, we've got a big National Marine Science Centre there, so we do a lot of research on coasts and estuaries and oceans and reefs, so yeah, good job.
And how did you get into that?
I did engineering at Sydney University and then majored in environmental engineering and then sort of just had a passion for the ocean, so started working in the ocean.
Find that rewarding?
Oh, I love it. Yeah, best job in the world.
So you travel a bit to the reef, I suppose, do you?
Yep, yeah, we're up there quite often, at least once or twice a year on big field campaigns for a few weeks. We fly over it a lot with a little aeroplane because we're looking at whether you can change the clouds to cool down the water. Mm-hmm. So marine cloud brightening.
Yeah, we've got a friend who's a marine biologist who does a lot of diving on the reef, and he was telling us about some parts are doing really well and some parts aren't doing too well, but he mentioned the big flood, the big cyclone, all the fresh water, which had a big impact.
Yeah, cyclones can be a real mixed bag for the reef, so they cause a lot of coral destruction themselves, just the winds and the waves that they whip up can kill a lot of coral just by the force of it and breaking them off and tipping them upside down. And then, yeah, all the rainfall can wash a lot of nutrients and sediment down onto the reef and fresh water that can cause bleaching. But at the same time, sometimes they create a lot of cloud and mix up a lot of cool water, so they sort of come along and it's not a direct hit. They can actually stop the bleaching occurring. If there's a marine heat wave and a cyclone comes through, sometimes it's sort of a direct hit and does a lot of damage. Sometimes if it passes by, it can cool the water down and reduce some of the bleaching. So, yeah, depends very much on the cyclone and the track and how intense it is and when and where it hits.
You've got a fascinating job. Dan, you had to come to the show. Have you been to the show bag section? Because you've got little kids. You'll be way down with them.
We're headed there next, I think. Preparing the wallet.
Good luck with that.
Thanks.
Good luck, Dan.
Have a good day. You too. See you later.
Thanks, mate. G'day, this is Macca.
G'day, Macca. It's Judy here from Bundaberg in Queensland.
Hi, Jude.
I was just ringing to follow up on your story earlier about the Australian Made logo and to let your listeners know how Coles and Woolies are exploiting that logo with their private label soy milk. So my husband and I are soybean farmers here, and unfortunately Coles and Woolies are using imported soy from China. They're adding it to Australian water to make soy milk, and then they're whacking the Australian Made logo on it because it's got Australian water in it.
That's not true, Judy. You're making this up. Really?
I wish I was making it up. And soybean farmers we're being overlooked by the big supermarkets for Chinese soy, but they're still exploiting the Australian Made logo.
Well, I just said that for fun because I can well believe anything, Jude. I don't know. So that become if they use Australian water because it's what the value of the contents, isn't it? Something like that.
It's the percentage. So they're saying that it's 89 or 90% Australian, but that's the water content. The soy that they've added from China is only 4%, and then the rest is water and a bit of sugar and what have you. And so they're not using any Australian soy in that soy milk, but they've got an Australian-made logo on the front of their private label soy milk claiming that it's Australian, and it's the water that's Australian.
Apart from getting kicked in the behind, Judy, tell me about the life of a soy milk producer, farmer. What do you do? Tell me.
Well, we grow sugar cane and we grow soybeans in rotation with the cane. My husband's a third-generation farmer in this region, and we supply the last cooperative mill in Queensland, actually, the Isa Sugar Mill near Childers. And we grow soybeans. We have done for 20-odd years now because they're so good for the soil. And with all this talk about fertiliser prices and availability, you know, we're very grateful to have our soybeans because they provide us with free nitrogen. They fix nitrogen from the atmosphere, convert it into plant available nitrogen. So we grow them in such a way that we'll store that nitrogen in the soil to grow our next sugarcane crop.
So if somebody, because we're the great coffee snobs of the world, and we define ourselves by turning up at the Harry's little pop-up coffee place and saying,
"Yep,
Harry, I'll have a baby chino, or I call them a babuccino. It's the first I heard. Yeah. Babuccino, a soy babuccino, or whatever. That soy is probably coming from China, most of it.
It is. And I'm really glad you brought up the coffee example because there's quite a few sort of boutique soy milk brands out there that coffee lovers perceive as being, you know, the higher quality soy milk for making their coffee. But in fact, those brands are buying their soybeans in the US or Canada. They're shipped to Japan for processing, and then they're shipped into Australia as a processed soy milk already in the carton. There's nothing Australian in it. And whereas Vitasoy, which is the only soy milk manufacturer in Australia that uses Australian soybeans, they buy from farmers like us in Queensland or from the northern New South Wales, the Northern Rivers region. They buy direct from farmers down there and they truck the soybeans down to Wodonga and they make a beautiful barista quality soy milk at the Vitasoy factory there at Wodonga. And, you know, they're employing 250 people at that factory. And it reminded me of that bloke you just had on talking about the tomatoes and SPC.
Yeah. Chris,
and you know, processing Australian tomatoes. Well, we've got the same issue with Coles and Woolies. They get their private label tomato from Italy, and last year they were investigated by the anti-dumping commissioner for suspicion of using imported tomatoes. SPC put in a complaint against them, and they were found guilty. Coles and Woolies were found guilty of using subsidised Italian tomatoes and forcing Australian farmers to compete with that. But guess what the Australian government did about it? Nothing. Nothing.
Why am I not surprised, Jude?
Yep.
It's very depressing. I'm not going to talk to you anymore, Judy, because you...
Sorry about that, Macca.
How's your latest flood, Jude, in Bundy?
Well, it hit Bundaberg pretty hard, as you've heard. Because our farm is on a smaller river, the Gregory River, our farm was flooded as well. But soybeans, luckily, are a tough, hardy crop, and so is sugarcane. And that's why they're both very well suited to these coastal regions, because they do handle a bit of wet feet and a bit of tough weather. And so essentially our cane and soybeans went under in the flood on one of our farms, but they've both, the water drained away pretty quickly and both crops have recovered pretty nicely. So we hope to still be able to harvest those soybeans, and the cane will grow on and we'll harvest it later in the year.
Oh, Jude, nice to talk to you, Jude. I hope to be in Bundaberg sometime this year. So look me up and give me a glass of soy.
Well, I'll make you a soy latte. That'll be the best.
Well, I actually, when I go to the I just say, "Can I have a cup of coffee, please?" And they're very bemused. They say, "What? No oat? No oat milk?" So it's the baristas don't. Yeah, they can't cope with it. They have to sit down. Well, anyway, okay. Jude, great to talk to you. Thanks for informing the rest of us. Good on you.
Good on you. Thank you.
See ya.
Bye.
This email came in just this week. It's Easter show week or 2 weeks. And Dave says, "I'm writing this as a long-time listener looking forward to the Easter show this year for a different reason. At 65... I've entered an orange cake in this year's Royal Easter Show baking competition, and I thought I'd share the backstory. It's a time-honoured Australian Women's Weekly recipe, one my nana, Ramsay Hurst of Louis Terrace, Hurstville, used to bake for me when I was just a boarder at Waverley College in the 1970s. Back then, boarders were allowed out on a Saturday afternoon after sport, and I'd often stay at my nan's for the weekend. On January the 29th of this year, on a bit of a whim, I rang the Royal Agricultural Society to ask if there was a baking category for men over 65. There wasn't, but the young woman on the phone, Letitia, said, "We do have a novice orange cake, class 421, entries closed today," so I entered. The rules are simple. 8-inch round tin, no springform cake tins, icing on top only, no decorations. Since then, my friend and cake coach Glennis and I have made about 18 orange cakes. We've tested butter, salted and unsalted, various self-raising flours, full cream milk, free range and caged eggs, and more oranges than I care to count. We've worked across different ovens, chasing consistency. There's been a lot of zesting, mixing and adjusting. I won't be getting scurvy anytime soon. My latest plumbing apprentice, because Dave's a plumber in his other life, Courtney, she's from New Jersey, has even designed a rose-coloured show day T-shirt so we can find each other in the Arts and Crafts Hall. Now, show day was Thursday the 2nd of April, and the cakes had to be dropped off by 11:45, and the judging was at 1 o'clock. Win, lose or draw, said Dave, I didn't expect making an orange cake to be this much fun. It also has an unexpected side effect. When I tell my clients and colleagues in the plumbing business what I'm doing for Easter, it usually gets a laugh and the same question, can I have a slice? Monday mornings in the office have turned into informal tastings. Well, that was Dave's email, and when I turned up at the Easter show, you couldn't believe the sight. So I couldn't miss this for quid, so I turned up, and first of all, we'll come and meet them. I'm standing in front of tables, and a cake lover's dream, really, it is here at the show. Your name is?
Brenda.
Brenda, what are you here for?
I'm here for the Lamington competition, so the novice competition. It's a bit of a family affair, so I'm here with my mum and my sister, and we all compete off against each other each year. I'm from Deniliquin. We're from all over the place, though. Mummy's from near Wagga on a property, and Julie is at
Hi, Jules.
Molong.
I'm from, yeah, Molong.
So how do you usually go? Do you usually win, do you?
Well, if we want to talk about the last results, I did place second and Mum placed fourth. Julie, unfortunately, didn't place. Oh, highly commended, which is fourth. Yes, otherwise known as fourth.
The big mystery to me is what happens to all this lovely stuff after it's been judged. I mean, why can't I have a Lamington or a sponge cake? Or...
Well, it's a little bit sad, actually, so...
The judges take it home, I know.
The world's gone nuts. It actually gets thrown out, so they can't even give it to charity anymore. It actually all gets thrown out, which is very sad.
It used to get given to charity, and because of all the health regulations and that, now they're not allowed to...
What's your name?
Beverly.
Where are you from, Bev?
Illawarra.
Illawarra.
Yes.
Have you got skin in the game, have you?
Yeah, I've got Lamingtons against them.
Lamingtons again. I'm not a fan of Lamingtons. What's your name?
I'm a spectator.
Well, what is it about winning here in Sydney? I mean, do you go on the Denny show? Or?
So our local show is the Illawarra show back at home, so we go in that one every year.
But you come to Sydney for why?
To compete on the big stage. It's like the Olympics. The Olympics of the show doesn't get any bigger.
All right. Well, good luck. Good luck to you all. And happy cooking.
Thank you.
May your mix master never stop.
Yeah. Well, Julie's blew up on her third attempt at the Lamington, so you can talk to her about that. She might need a new one.
What happened,
if
Jill?
If she can get a sponsor.
I don't know. The butter was too hard, I guess.
Good on you. Nice to talk to you all. Thank you. Yeah. Hello.
G'day, Macca.
What's your name?
Dave. Dave Conroy.
Oh, you're Dave?
Yeah.
Oh, the Dave?
Yeah.
The orange cake Dave.
How did you know?
Oh, you sent me an email.
Well, there's a lot of excitement here today. Mm. Class 421 novice orange cake. It's a great honour to be here, first time at the Sydney Royal Easter Show, and to make a cake with this fantastic group of helpers has just been spectacular. We had a lot of fun. Life is a little bit like a cake. It's the ingredients, you know, it's the blending, it's the time in the oven, and it's the enjoyment of the product at the end of it. So life is like a piece of cake. You and I know that you like a piece of cake, and I definitely do, so hang around for a cup of tea afterwards.
Dave, I'll be very... Are you nervous?
Bloody oath I am, yeah, and excited at the same time, so... So, yeah, but it's been a great day and a great process just to get here. But one of the beauties of being here this morning to put our cake in is we've had an opportunity to walk around the show, and we live in a great place, mate. You know, we've got so much good stuff. The people that we've met and spoken to just around the grounds here, and the produce and the cattle and the goats and the pigs that we've seen. We live in the lucky country, and we know. And I've heard you talk about things that are happening offshore. But I don't know, if you keep your head where your feet are, And we can do that here in Australia, then we're in a pretty good place.
People do all sorts of things, but I would never have thought a cake maker and artisan was actually a plumber. But there you go.
Everybody's got to eat, mate.
So you haven't got a speech prepared, though?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. But I've got a lot of friends who are excited about our simple entry today. And part of my story is that the cake came from my grandmother, and it's something that was passed down to me from my grandmother, and I cook it for my kids, and now I cook it for all my mates. So good fun. I'm a cup of tea and a piece of cake guy, so you're welcome for a cup of tea and a piece of cake at my joint.
You can't beat it. Thanks, Dave. Good on you, mate.
Cheers.
Gary's in Wollstonecraft. Morning, Gaz.
Yeah, hello, Ian. Yeah. Mate, I was just going to say, you know, I was at Randwick yesterday.
Yeah.
What's that?
Yeah, I was just saying, yeah, right, the big races were on yesterday.
Yeah, well, there you go. You all mentioned the big races were on yesterday. I wish someone would start mentioning the big races were on yesterday. It's the Easter weekend.
Yeah.
And as we know, we had the Doncaster yesterday.
The Doncaster, the TJ Smith, the Australian Derby, and I backed a horse in the last race. Because I don't know anything about horses, but if I see a name, I back the horse. Like years ago, just after my mum died, there was a horse running at Bendigo in the cup called For Lorna. My mum's name's Lorna. I put $20 on it.
I remember the horse.
You do not. Do you really? Anyway, it won at about 20 or 25 to 1, and I thought, well, that's an omen. So yesterday in the last race, I backed a horse called Tomato Toasty.
Yeah,
ran
a great race.
Yeah, and, well, it nearly won. It must have been about 60 or 70 to 1, but it only came second, but it paid about $15 for a place, so I was a happy man, Gaz.
Well, you wouldn't believe it. An Irishman I know came up, and he has a bet, and he said, $50 on that one there. I said, what makes you backing that? Why are you backing that? He said, he had his little daughter with her. I said, pick out her name. She came down. She said, Tomato Toasty. And he put $50 on it with me at 80 to 1. And I think it got out the hundreds or something. And it ran an enormous race.
Yes, it did. It came third. It came third.
Yeah, it ran third. It was enormous. It was up near the lead all the way and it fought on very well.
Gaz, did you go out to the races yesterday?
Yes, I did.
Yeah, you're an inveterate race goer, are you?
I am. I'm a bookmaker. I've been going to races all my life, and I've seen it all happen. And
well, last week I spoke to Jerry Harvey about something different. We were talking about the price of things and AI and what it means to business and how things are, chaos theory and all that sort of stuff. But at the end of the conversation, we had a talk and he said, I'm going to the races. He says, my horse ran in the slipper the other day but it came second, but it's running in Doncaster today. And his horse, he owns part of it. It's called Champion d'Italia, and it won, of course.
Yes, McDonald rode it. And it was enormous running the slipper, and it ran up to that. It got out in the market very late in betting. It was unlayable towards the end of betting, it defied its drift in the market, and it won very, very well.
Tell me this, because I know Ian Johnson, who bred Briasa, and he said to me, he said to me a couple of years ago, he's got this lovely horse in Briasa and he's very good and might be good.
It's a grey.
Yeah, and it ran stone motherless yesterday. Was that because of the wet? I don't know.
Well, no, it handles the wet, but it was it was a little bit disappointing last week at Rosehill, to tell you, in my opinion. But it did run last, but it was up near the lead. They didn't go hard. But look, that's what happens in racing all the time. It might have come back as good as it was before. But yesterday in the Doncaster, this three-year-old filly that won the race, she's Alibi.
Yeah.
They only paid a farmer in Queensland paid $10,000 for us. You go to the Easter sales, which were over just recently, and it cost you $10,000 to buy a hair on a horse for some of the price.
But yeah, exactly.
And this filly, she only carried 49 kilos, ridden by the Jamie Carr, or now Jamie Mellon.
Yeah.
She came from third last. She won the hand canter. You very rarely see Doncaster's one like it was won yesterday. This horse, this filly, she could be anything. She runs in a Cox Plate. I think they could put in the barriers backwards and they come out and still win.
Gary, tell me a couple of things. Was there a good crowd there at Randwick?
Well, unfortunately, that's one of the reasons I was ringing, because I was listening to your station on Thursday, and they were saying, oh, yes, now all the sport is coming up over the long weekend and da-da-da, and there was a mention of the NRL and the AFL and the basketball and this and that. So someone's going to say the Doncaster's on Saturday. And, of course, we used to have, it was institutionally, and on Monday there was always the
Metropolitan. Wasn't it the Metropolitan was on at the same time as the Doncaster or sometime?
Yes, it was, and then it's all races have been changed. But of course, Sydney Cup now is on next Saturday, and tomorrow, Monday, they're trying a new angle, and instead of Randwick being on, the races run at Rose Hill on Monday.
Oh, right, okay.
And unfortunately, I don't think they're going to get a lot of people there, but it was an institution. The show, when the show was at the showground,
yeah.
Of course, you have no idea the amount of people, even though the show was on, used to rock up on Sydney Cup weekend on the Monday,
yeah.
You couldn't move. And it's a bit like Anzac Day, which is coming up shortly. I can close my eyes and remember the sea of diggers after the march that used to rock up to Randwick, the sea of medals walking around. Unfortunately, Anzac Day now, it's a crying shame. You're battling the sea of a medal these days.
Well, you don't have to bet. As I said, if I see a horse and I like the name, I think, I've got a mate called Errol and Errol's song's running, I'll put $5 on Errol. But, yeah, and it's a nice, you meet lots of people who own horses, people like you. How's the bookmaking business, Gaz?
Well, it's very tough. I'm in a bit of a position where I've seen it all come and go. I was very lucky to... my grandfather was a bookie, my father was a bookie, and I worked for, when I went back to 1968, or it could have been me, 66, I think it was 68, working for a bookmaker called Terry Page, who became, he bought the Coogee Bay at one stage, he became the biggest bookie in Sydney, and I, after working for Terry, I was working for Bill Waterhouse, who's no longer with us. I worked for his son, Robbie. I'm a bookmaker now, and I've seen it all come and go. It's very tough, Ian. It's a very, very cutthroat game for the simple reason, like everything in Australia, we're overtaxed. And unfortunately, all this prize money that is given out with the Everest and it seems to be a competition to see how much we can
pay out
races on, it all comes... Like we pay huge taxes. All the corporate bookmakers pay huge taxes. Wherever the corporates and the bookies on course got to get it from? We've got to get it from the punters.
Yeah.
And that's where it all goes back to. It's bookmaking on course these days. Like, well, yesterday I'm at Randwick. I work at all the city meetings and all the provincial meetings. And Wyong was on yesterday as well as Randwick. And I can't be in two places at once. My wife went up and worked at my stand at Wyong. And unfortunately, there weren't very many people at Wyong either. Well, the weather wasn't that good like it was at Randwick yesterday. Would have kept a few people away. But making whole, we'll put it this way. In the last, every Monday, the first Monday in every month, going back not so long ago, outside the office of the Bookmakers Co-op in Sydney, there'd be anywhere between a half a dozen to a dozen bookmakers applying to take out a licence.
Oh, wow.
And when you did get that licence, you just couldn't go into Randwick or Rose Hill or Canterbury or Warwick Farm or even some of the provincial meetings like Hawkesbury and Kembla Grange, which were run by the AJC at the time. They were their number two licences. There was a waiting list to get into everywhere, whereas... In the last 15 years, besides bookmakers taking out licences online, I think there's only been one or two bookmakers in the last 15 years take out a licence to work on the track. Mm. So that tells a story how tough it is.
If
it was any good,
they'd
be lined up.
I've always thought it's a colourful racing identities. It's nice to get out to the track and you mix with... Cabbages and kings, if you know what I mean. Gaz, I've got to fly, nice to talk to you. Thanks for your call. I think it's great to mention great races like the TJ Smith and the Inglis and all those races and Melbourne too. It's probably a bit more popular in Melbourne, but we'll go into that another time. Good on you, mate.
See you, mate. Bye.
Bye. Louise is in Karratha. Morning, Louise.
Morning, Maka. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Good. I just wanted to ring and say happy Easter. My husband listens to you every Sunday when he heads out detecting, but I'm heading south on the roads to Dongara, so I wanted to ring up and say hi and happy Easter.
Thank you very much, Louise. And how's things around Karratha?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. We've been waiting for the roads to open, heading south after Tropical Cyclone Narelle came through, and I've been waiting for a few days to head off to my mum and dad's for Easter. So the roads opened last night. Could be a bit dodgy through Nanyatara Manilia area, but the roads are open, so that's exciting.
Yeah, well, there's another one around the place, they reckon. I don't know where it's going to be, but there's another. What's
I heard you talking before.
Mina,
like,
Mina,
no,
or
something. No.
Yeah. Well, you know what they like.
We don't want another one, thank you.
No, exactly. So, Louise, how long have you lived in Karratha?
Yep, so Dad moved us here in 1988, a long time ago. I still call it home, as does my sister, but Mum and Dad retired and moved to Dongara a few years ago, so that's nice for them. But, yeah, we still are all in Karratha with our family.
Well,
so
you're a local.
We love it.
You're a local, 88, my God, yes. It wouldn't be many people living in Karratha as long as you have.
No, there's a handful. You see them around town and you just know.
Well, that's
it's a great place, but poor Exmouth copped the brunt of it. We got a fair bit of wind and rain, and it was pretty scary there for a little bit, but I feel for everyone in Exmouth and Coral Bay that copped the brunt of it.
Yes, and Exmouth copped one before too, didn't they? Look, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I think around
that was bad.
Yeah, I'll say, and they lost everything. We sent them some books, I think, for the library had lost its book. Yeah. But that was about 20 years ago.
I'm a librarian. School librarian.
Oh, that's good. Are people still reading books, Louise?
They are, not as much, but they definitely are. The kids are gravitating more towards the graphic novels. The good old comics have made a huge comeback in the last few years. So
yeah, they have.
But yeah, there's still a handful of bookworms, and I love it.
Louise, great to talk to you. I hope to meet you sometime.
Too, Maka.
Good on you.
Yeah, lovely. Come to the northwest, mate.
I will.
Thank you.
See ya. Bye. G'day, this is Maka.
Hi, Maka. How are you?
I'm good. What's happening? What's
That's
your name?
Good. My name's Heidi, and we're actually camping at the moment. There's 12 of us at Borley Point coming away for an Easter weekend, and we actually have one of your most avid supporters with us here at camp.
Heidi, tell everybody around Australia, because they're listening this morning in Karratha, and you might have just heard Louise. Louise, she's travelling the roads after Cyclone Narelle has blocked some of the roads, but she doesn't know where's Borley Point for everybody.
Borley Point's down south, so on the south coast of Australia. It's actually a really pretty part of the state, to be honest.
Uh-huh. And you go camping regularly. There's 12 of you, did you say, Heidi?
Well, there's 12 of us at the moment. There's usually a lot more than 12, but there's 12 of us at the moment. And we have Steve Hales. He actually drives trucks for a living, has his own business, and he drives trucks all around Australia.
Uh-huh.
And delivering a lot of cattle and, yeah.
Heidi, you said there's usually more. Is this because of the times we live in, that there's not as many people?
No, we usually go away for our great escape on the June long weekend, which is all our family, but this weekend is just a couple of us because my sister has an extravaganza back at home.
Oh, well, it's 12 people's enough for a good time. So, have you had any weather or weather's been good or...?
Oh, we've had a little bit of rain, had a beautiful day the first day we got here and a lot of rain yesterday, but it's the sun's trying really hard to come out today.
Yeah, it's been a funny old year, hasn't it? I don't know. Where do you live, Heidi?
We live in the Hunter Valley.
In the Hunter Valley. It's been warm up there, I've seen. And have you had a bit of rain up there? Or?
No, we could do with a little bit of rain in the Hunter Valley at the moment. It's very dry.
Yeah, parts of New South Wales are very dry, apparently. Southern New South Wales, where you are, and then up the Hunter, and then in the northern districts up there, around there, it's very very dry, but that's what happens. So, Heidi, tell me, what happens when you go camping? Do you glamp, or do you just is it just simple?
No, we glamp. We all have caravans, but we do glamp a little bit.
Uh-huh.
I do. I'm possibly the worst at bringing away the glamping stuff.
Oh, well, that's, you need a bit of comfort, I think. It's no point sleeping on the cold ground. Absolutely. If you can avoid it. And is there, there's a nice place to swim there at Borley Point?
Yes, it's on the beach, and we're actually, yeah, there's a really nice pool, and it's great.
Now, your truck driving mate, is he around?
He is around.
Can I have a yarn to him?
You sure can.
What's his name?
His name is Steve Macca.
Steve, all right. Put Steve on, and nice to talk to you, Heidi. Heidi? Heidi.
Yeah, all, good, Macca.
Heidi, Heidi, Heidi. Steve, all right. Good on you. Thanks, Heidi.
No worries. All good.
Here's Steve. G'day, Steve.
How you going, Macca?
I'm all right, mate.
That's great, mate.
You're chilling out for the weekend, are you? Long weekend?
Yeah, mate, yeah. We're just having a few days down the south coast here. A bit of a look around, mate. Yeah.
And where do you drive, Steve, for a living?
Yeah, we've got our own little business, mate. Yeah, we've got our livestock, mainly in the New South Wales and northern Victoria and southern Queensland.
Uh-huh. Mainly. That's a big bailiwick, mate.
Oh, well, mate, yeah, that's just what we do. Okay, yeah.
I was just talking to, Hugh in Bingra, and he said it's dry as whatever. They're selling a lot of cattle up there in northern New England up there because it's so dry.
Yeah, well, they probably want to get them out before the cold, mate. So they're sending them, but there's grass probably in southern Queensland and Victoria. So they're sort of shipping them out down there. A lot of cattle have been going up there and down to Victoria. But it is dry in the New England, it is, yep.
And you're using a lot of diesel, I suppose. How's that affecting you, Steve?
Right at the minute, mate, we're passing it on, but that'll probably... because it's happened so quick, we've been passing it on with a bit of a fuel levy, but that's up to date. I just don't know what's going to happen in the future, Macca.
No, you don't. I mean, I suppose newspapers and, television and radio have got a prognosticator. They say, oh, this might happen and this might happen, and you do this and the war might end and it might go on, duddly-dum. Nobody knows, really. It's like life, Steve, in lots of ways. You're just guessing in lots of ways. So you just got to make – I spoke to Ron Finnemore, was it last week or week before? But he said the difference is this time with the fuel thing is that the price has risen so quickly. I think when I last looked at diesel weeks ago, it was about $1.70 or something like that, or it was cheaper than petrol, and now it's over $3 depending where you go. I suppose what's it like out in the bush?
Yeah, mate, it's $3.10. You got $3.30 in places. It depends where you are. Mm. But, that's where it's at. $1.75 three and a half weeks ago. And then now we're paying anywhere from $3.10 to $3.30.
And Ronnie said that, the thinking of parking up because it's cheaper to park up than to run your truck.
Yeah, well, and those bigger companies, mate, they're probably are locked into a fair bit of... contracts and that, so it might be hard to sort of lift their prices a bit, but in our part of the world, we've been able to pass that on a little bit.
Steve, great to talk to you, mate, and enjoy your day off. You got the long, it'll end too quickly, mate, but there's another long weekend coming up around Anzac Day.
So good on you, Macca.
This is the land of the long weekend, as you know, Steve.
Yeah, for sure, mate. Nah. Well, good on you, Macca.
Good on you, mate. See ya.
See you, mate. Bye.
Bye. G'day, this is Macca.
Oh, hello, Ian. It's Jeff here.
Oh, Jeff. Where are you, Jeff?
I'm in Dubbo, Ian, for Easter. But look, my great friend Vaughan Price is a brass band man, has been all his life since he was 7 years old. He plays the cornet and the trumpet. He's in the Warringah Brass Band, and he's in Brisbane for the National Brass Band Championships. And I thought of you during the week when I heard you talking to Dom and you're out at the show and talking about playing the trombone like your dad, like your father did.
Yeah.
And it was a family tradition. And it's the same in Vaughan's family. Yeah, he's one of three boys and his father played. He was Welsh. And it wasn't an option in Vaughan's father. They all had to play a brass instrument. And Vaughan's dad only worried about two things. It was family and band. and not always in that order. I thought maybe you would understand that.
Yeah, well, it's interesting when you say, you tell me his name, Vaughan Price, because friends of my dad was Dave Price, who was second trumpet in the Sydney Symphony, and his brother was Ray Price from the Port Jackson Jazz Band, but he played the banjo. But Dave Price They may have been related, but Dave probably played the trumpet, and he lived on that side of the. So yeah, maybe they're related some way. I don't know, but
No doubt. So they're all up there, the Warringah Brass Band, and they're on at 3:30 this afternoon, and you can catch them online on YouTube, and it's on brassband.com, and that's spelled B-A-N-N-E-D.
Yeah.
You can Google that and see them.
And where are they playing? Last time I went to the Brass Band Champs in Brisbane, they were in a big, was it the Town Hall or something, or a big...
Yeah, they're at the Town Hall, beautiful Town Hall there in Brisbane, and they're in the Ithaca Hall. And it's all there on brassband.com, and you can see them. And they're bands from all over Australia. You know the names, like the White Horse,
the Hawthorne
Council Band. Hawthorne Ballarat, Dandenong.
You name it. Yeah.
And the tradition's wonderful, isn't it, Ian? The pride that goes into it and the sense of... And those bands, they make the community stronger.
Well, and you can't have a... a fair or a show or a parade or an Anzac Day without a lovely brass band, and then we take it for granted. But I've just got my guitar here, and I've been trying to relearn the guitar, not relearn, but be better than I have been, because I haven't really played it for 10 years. I mean, I play it, pick it up, and strum, but I used to play, but it's the same with the trumpet and. You know, there's a lot of dedication goes into those young men and women who play a brass instrument, and it's hard, and it's just hard. You start sitting down reading and there's a lot of work goes into that, and I don't think people really, and that's why probably a lot of people don't do it, because you start playing a musical instrument and you soon realise, oh, this is not... this is not a piece of cake, and you can play.
Well, Ian, I went to their farewell last Sunday, and it was their final rehearsal. And what struck me about the Warringah band was the number of young people that they've attracted to it. Half the members of the band were under 30 years old, and probably less than that, maybe under 25, half of them. Now, what I calculated was that young people have got plenty of choices these days, and they're not going to dedicate their time and energy to being in that band unless, number one, they feel welcome, and number two, they're enjoying it. Because, as you said, it's hard, seriously hard, playing brass instruments.
I'll say.
Now, that's wonderful, wonderful culture that they're doing that, and I just thought, how good is that? That they're doing that, and the tradition will continue. They're 50 years, they've been playing for 50 years, and they'll go for another 50 years if they've got that number of young people doing it. They're all up there in Brisbane, and I was having a chat to them, and I wished them well, and they said, oh, look, I said, I'm sure you'll do very well, and they said, well, we hope to, but the main thing is we're all up there together and we're having fun. And I thought, that's just the best thing, isn't it? What a way to spend Easter.
Exactly. Go on. I was
just going to say thanks for taking my call and hearing about it, and I hope that people see them on Brass Band.
Well, if I was in Brisbane this morning, I'd go down and see them.
Have you seen that movie Brassed Off, the Grindthorpe Band?
Yes, I have. I have. Wonderful.
That's moving. That's moving.
Jeff, where are you this morning? You're not in Brisbane.
I'm in Dubbo at my daughter's place. She's expecting a baby soon, so we've come up here to spend Easter with her, and it's just magic. I'm normally there in Sydney on the northern beaches, and I said it's the Warringah Town Band there. They practice at the Terry Hills Public School Assembly Hall every week, and have been doing so for 50 years.
Good on you, Jeff. Thanks for telling people about the Brass Band Champs. More power to their
Easter, Ian.
More power to their embouchure. I think that's right. Yeah.
Okay. See you. Just to you. You strengthen the community.
Thanks, mate. Good on you. Bye. Thanks, Jeff. Bye. Bye. Regarding the latest moon mission, says Mary, it won't be long until we see a pair of golden arches of the commercial variety making a major landscape on the moonscape. There was a lady professor of environmentalism or something, and they're going to build a little closed environment on the moon, because there's no air on the moon, and so they have a closed environment. But I suppose they plan to live on the moon sooner or later. That Davos bloke, he reckoned in a couple of decades people will be living on the moon and living in outer space. So maybe he's right, I don't know. Morning, Macker. I just heard the soya farmer talking a call to you. That was, wasn't that interesting? Did you hear the soya? You can, you'll cop it in the, it was Judy in Bundaberg. She was a nice, the ladies here, they're full of beans. Judy was full of beans and so was Louise in Karratha. Lovely, wonderful women. Marion says, I just heard the soya farmer who called you. There's a Japanese bloke called Dye making Dye's Natto in Sydney from Australian soybeans. It's fermented soybeans and it's very good for you. Prevents osteoporosis. Well, look, I don't know, Marion, but that's good that somebody's making soy from Australian soybeans. And this is Dave from Bingle Bay, that's in Queensland. He says, because we talked about cakes this morning, I went to the cake judging and Dave, we'll put it in the podcast. And Dave decided to enter his, for on a whim, his orange cake in the competition. And lots of people there, they're all lined up. They go there, the people put their cakes in and then it's judged and they're set out on tables. And then the judges come in and they sit there and some of them make their own little T-shirts. So they're a little group from here and there and everywhere and they wait for the judging. But anyway, this Dave says, my dad, Malcolm Eaves, when he got to 80 years old, decided he would start making cakes and enter them in the Perth Royal. He had never cooked toast before then, let alone baked cakes. He was a retired publican and store owner. The first year he cleaned up with the first prize for his cornflour sponges. Annoyed the hell out of the old girls that had entered the cakes for years. Second year he picked up another first prize. Then they put him that year as the centrefold in the CWA cookbook. Dad's secret was that he used duck eggs. He retired from cake making after making the centrefold. I hope it wasn't one of those nude centrefolds they used to have in those magazines like Cleo. And I'll be at the show at the Sydney Royal, which is going gangbusters. The thing that that I've noticed, that everybody's walking around eating, and I think kids, there was a lot of kids there the other day because it was the last day of school, public holiday had started, and they were eating that those things on a stick. They're like a potato which has been done with those one of those curved things and it's on a long stick and it's fried, but everyone's eating. And I think it's that at the show, wherever the show is, at the Adelaide show or the Perth show, whatever, there's all sorts of different food that kids never walk. If they're walking down the main street of their suburb, they're not going to see all this sort of stuff, these Dagwood dogs and stuff. So it's like, and there's other lovely stuff there. So it's really a extravaganza of food, and kids love to eat stuff, don't they, you know, and drinks and things in, yeah, they just lap it up. So it's all about food, I reckon, the show. Good morning and welcome wherever you are. I went to the show the other day, and I love to see people, you know, who've done a cake or taken their wool or whatever. I went to the eggs and saw the judging and the colour of the yolks and all that sort of stuff. I met Glenn Best, who's a steward there. Come and meet him. Glenn Best.
That's correct, yeah.
How are you, Glenn?
Yeah, well, thanks. Well.
We've come together at the poultry section in front of the eggs. Here, you're just checking it out. Been running one?
It's been running one, yeah. The egg section's been running one and the poultry section's been just been announced as well. I'm on the council, yeah, so we've got a gentleman by the name of Brendan Sharp as our chairman of the poultry section, yeah.
Lots of interest. I remember when COVID came, people were buying chooks and he said you can't get them here, and I suppose that was because maybe they wanted company or maybe they thought food was going to be hard to get and so they'd have eggs and things like that, I don't know.
Yeah, certainly. Poultry's always been quite popular, but we've seen a fair bit of growth in the last sort of 4 to 5 years. What you are finding, probably historically you had a smaller amount of really big breeders, whereas now you've got a lot of small breeders, which sort of aligns with what you were saying, a lot of people
getting some backyard interest.
Yeah, it is fantastic. Yeah.
When I look back at my childhood, my grandma had chooks and we had bantams, and I saw the bantam eggs over there and I thought, oh, well, we used to have little bantam eggs when we were kids. She'd make us little bantam eggs in the morning. I think it's a great education for little kids. Everybody should have a chook yard in their back if they've got a backyard.
Yeah, 100%. And I've been lucky living in the country, setting all my life and being able to have chickens. But I've got three young granddaughters and there's nothing they love more than come and stick a little bantam under their arm and wander around the yard with it. So it is because it's a good grounding, if you like.
Or hatch the eggs and you get all these little yellow fluffy things going squeak, squeak, squeak.
Exactly, yeah, no, that's right.
That's a wonderful thing. So what does the winner of the egg competition get, apart from a bit of kudos?
Yeah, look, obviously they get a there's a small cash prize goes with it, but obviously the real prize is that bit of felt ribbon that says you got the best egg.
At the Sydney Royal.
At the Sydney Royal, exactly. Yeah.
The other thing I was going to see, sometimes when you open egg, these have got lovely yolk colours, but sometimes you're like, and I saw a few here, much paler. Is the colour a big deal? Is that the seller or what?
It is, yeah, and certainly there's actually a range or a grade of colours, and it's really just based on what the customer wants to see, and obviously that nice rich yellow colour is what the customer wants, so that's what's being aimed for. And it's obviously very dependent on the feed that the birds have been given and their health.
We used to feed them pollard, I remember.
Yeah,
pollard,
yep, yep.
Lettuce leaves and all bread, all went in the chook out.
Yeah, no, exactly, and that's a good thing these days too. And, you know, we don't like to waste things, so certainly being able to put the scraps out of the kitchen, perfect for the chooks.
You get excited when the show time comes around?
I love it, yeah, I really do. I look forward to this show every year. Been coming here for 1984, I think was the first time I showed my birds here as a kid, and yeah, I don't think I've missed a show since. Yeah,
it's a great time. People, you can see smiles on people, especially city people. Oh, look at that. I haven't seen that before. And yeah. It's lovely. I think it's a great idea. Great idea.
Yeah. Certainly encourage people to come and have a look and experience it.
Glenn, where do you live?
I live at Rolleston, near Mudgee, yeah, in central West New South Wales. Yeah.
And how's things out there?
Yeah, look, been a bit dry, but yeah, look, we're battling on. Yeah. It always rains at the end of the dry spell.
Great to meet you, Glenn. Good on you.
Yep, likewise. Thank you.
Another Sunday. That was Glenn Best. I love going to the show. I just do. That's why I'm going here on Tuesday. But I like to meet people. You never know. I met a bloke who was a former professor of food tech. Food technology. I'll bring you him next week. And I'll bring you next week, hopefully. You know, always drop us a line or whatever. See you on the road. I'm hoping to go to Brisbane soon. Hoping to go everywhere. Gee, we had some nice calls this morning. The bloke on Trevor on the Murray River. You'll have to listen to that. Gus on the Nullarbor, but he's taking his horses up there. Judy in Bundaberg was fantastic. And Louise was in Karratha. They're just lovely people that we talk to. And Jeff, what about Jeff, about Brass Band in Brisbane today? And Simon was in Arizona on the mine site there. All sorts of things. Stay tuned for the podcast. Stay tuned on ABC Local Radio. Always a wonderful, interesting morning. I always listen. There you go. I hope you enjoyed our highlights package. If you want the full Monty, listen in every Sunday morning from 5:30 till 10 and tune into Australia. If you see me on the road, stop and say g'day. Contact me at macatracks@gmail.com. Talk to you Sunday.